Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette, dated September 20th, 2020, Sunday. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headline, The Business of Big Ten Football, Return to Play, A Hopeful First Step, by Ben Zichterman. October 31st won't be a normal Illini football game day. With spectator access limited to family members of athletes, hotels won't be filled with fans and tailgaters won't fill the lots around Memorial Stadium. But local businesses are still hopeful that it eventually leads to something resembling the way things were pre-pandemic. We're not necessarily going to gain any business from it, but I'm truly hoping this is one step closer to putting people in attendance, said Kevin Dendria, general manager of the Holiday Inn Express in Urbana. You've got to play the game to get people in the stands. At least we're playing the game. Then we can work on part two. Even if fans can't attend, Dendria said, the Big Ten's announcement last week of a shortened season should help morale. University towns love their university sports, he said. At Game Day Spirit, retail manager Corey Schumard also viewed the news as a positive, but was likewise unsure about how much the games would help business. We're certainly thrilled, like everyone else, to get the biggest question out of the way, about whether there'd be football at all, he said. We're still a little bit cautious with our optimism and waiting to see what an Illini football Saturday looks like. With the business also serving as merchandise concessionaire at Memorial Stadium, Schumard said the influx of fans on typical football weekends is like Christmas 7 weekends of the year. The retail locations have a tendency to still exceed, depending on attendance, sales on site. But we're looking forward to a fuller stadium, he said. This was supposed to be a team that we were waiting for. Not having fans will be a big adjustment for our business, Schumard said, but don't get me wrong. Illini football playing is better than them not playing. At the Tumble Inn Tavern, owner Toby Hurges is excited. I'm hoping for the best, he said. They were talking about not allowing any tailgating, and if that's the case, then it would definitely cut down on our traffic. A lot of people from not too far away come in and like to make a weekend of it. The return of the NFL, NBA, and MLB have been good for Tumble Inn, he said. They haven't quite been the same without fans, but there's still something to watch, Hurges said. Perhaps the biggest beneficiaries of the return of football will be the TV and radio stations that broadcast the games, as well as Illinois Athletics. Of the $118 million in revenue the Division of Intercollegiate Athletics brought in fiscal 2019, $46 million came from media rights, of which $35 million was generated by the football team, according to its financial report. I think the reality is that certainly Wednesday's announcement will help us financially, Athletic Director Josh Whitman said. It makes our picture a little better than when we woke up Wednesday morning, but it's not going to be a silver bullet either. We're going to continue to work through the challenges presented by 9 football games instead of 12 and by not having public ticket sales. Those are all things that obviously have pretty dramatic implications for our bottom lines. Michael Arthur, Senior Vice President of Veritone, which handles content licensing for the Big Ten, said this week's announcement should provide relief to worried talk show hosts and TV networks. The networks, especially Fox and certainly the Big Ten Network, were planning other things to try to fill some time, he said. This obviously gives them a tremendous break. And, he said, you just enabled talk radio and coaching shows and regional sports network chatter to be relevant again. Despite the pandemic, he said, advertisers are still looking for places to advertise, and this is going to be an attractive place to put their ad money. He also said the timing of the conference's return should bode well. The awareness of the college season will be at a peak when the Big Ten starts playing, from a rating standpoint, Arthur said. I expect all the rights holders, and Fox specifically, will do very well with the programming. Let's try this again. The Big Ten announced its revised football schedule Saturday, and here's the lineup for Lovie Smith's Illini. October 24th at Wisconsin. October 31st versus Purdue. November 7th versus Minnesota. November 14th at Rutgers. November 21st at Nebraska. November 28th versus Ohio State. December 5th versus Iowa, December 12th at Northwestern, and December 19th to be announced. Continuing on the front page of the Sunday special, Eye on College Enrollment. The students have been coming back. The town is coming back. Eastern Illinois University, growing trend at EIU, eyeing goal of 9,000 students by 2025, by Scott Ritchie. Charleston. Positively, 4th Street Records sits on the corner of Lincoln Avenue and 4th Street. It's the nexus of where the Charleston community blends into the Eastern Illinois University campus. It's also a go-to spot for EIU students. The first level of the two-story brick building takes care of all your music and dorm and apartment decorating needs. Tables full of CDs and vinyl records run the gamut from current popular artists to indie brands waiting to be discovered. The side room houses a wide variety of posters. Upstairs, all the Panthers gear an EIU student or their parents, maybe especially their parents, could want. The return of students to campus every August brings in new and long-term business alike. The more students that find their way to Charleston at the end of every summer, the better. This August, we were up, even considering COVID, said Melissa Walker, who has worked at Positively 4th Street Records for 9 years and has managed the business the last 2.5. The students have been coming back. The town is coming back. They've been really good to us. 3 straight years of growth after EIU enrollment cratered to a low of 7,030 in 2017, continued this fall with a 10.5% increase. An enrollment of 8,628 means it is at its highest point since 2014, with the bottoming out in 2017 part of a decade-long annual decline. That enrollment increased by a double-digit percentage from 2019 during a global pandemic, though still came as a surprise. Campus visits became impossible. College fairs didn't happen. The traditional admissions process wound up being anything but. We thrive on relationships, said Josh Norman, EIU Vice President for Enrollment Management. We are known for personal attention. It's what we do. To take that virtual, it was such a scramble. There was so much discussion and so many different surveys going out and talk about gap years. The thing that was hardest for me around that subject was we know when students stay out of school, they stay out of school. They graduate and they think, I'm just going to take the semester off. I'm just going to take this year off, and they don't matriculate. That was my biggest concern. Those concerns ultimately didn't come to fruition, at least not at the level Norman expected. Freshman enrollment still increased at EIU from a year prior. So did the number of graduate students. The number of student athletes has also increased. That comes after athletic director Tom Michael was told to make scholarship cuts as a result of the budget impasse. 3 years ago, EIU President David Glassman, asked me to cut 23 scholarships out of our allotment, which isn't easy and obviously can have an impact on our competitiveness with some of our different teams, Michael said. We looked at that again and said, okay, this is what we need to do over the next couple years. What we've actually done is increased our student athlete enrollment by 10% as well. The most significant factor in this fall's overall 10.5% enrollment increase, though, came in EIU's growing dual credit program that works with smaller rural schools in East Central Illinois to provide dual credit opportunities that might not otherwise exist given the necessary instructor requirements, namely a master's degree. In those cases, EIU faculty become the faculty of record. An emphasis on the dual credit program saw that number jump from 1,580 in the fall of 2019 to 2,228 in the 10-day enrollment numbers released earlier this month. We added a couple major sections from that population, Norman said. The thing that's most exciting about that is the majority of those students are freshmen and sophomores in high school. It creates an incredible opportunity for us as we engage in those partnerships with those institutions. The dual credit students are included in EIU's enrollment totals, a change that is reflected in the 10-day enrollment numbers since 2018. Doing so changes the ratio of on-campus and off-campus students with high school dual credit included. The public numbers for fall 2020 show 4,585 students on campus and 4,041 off. Those numbers, Norman said, aren't as accurate of a representation of students actually on campus this fall. The on-campus and off-campus denotations are based, he continued, on the modality of courses. The pandemic has pushed more courses online, and a student living in a campus residence hall taking all online classes would then be regarded as an off-campus student for enrollment calculation purposes. Norman said approximately one-third of the total student population is taking all in-person classes. One-third have a hybrid semester between in-person and online classes, and the other third are in all online classes. If you look at our new incoming or freshman and sophomore students, it's closer to 70% in person, Norman said. We really were intentional from a student success standpoint that these new students needed to be in person. The number of students physically on campus, though, hasn't topped 6,000 since 2016. Businesses like Positively 4th Street Records and Bob's Used Books just down the block on Lincoln Avenue, but seemingly further from the pull of campus, could benefit from continued growth in those numbers. Are those numbers of people who are actually here? Bob's Used Books owner and EIU grad Joe Judd said about the increase in enrollment this fall. They also include high school students who are taking classes, which means nothing to us. The only thing that matters is whether people are coming here and going to school here. Judd, who owns Bob's Used Books with his wife Lisa, is in the process of moving his store several blocks north to downtown Charleston. While they did have some EIU student traffic before the pandemic, the community at large was a bigger part of their business. Even before COVID, they weren't our main source, Lisa Judd said of the EIU students. It's not necessarily the students, but when there's more students, it's their parents, when they're coming to visit, or dropping them off, or picking them up. We lost all those parents. Both Walker and the Judds agreed, though, that a healthier EIU made for a healthier Charleston. It's really the only industry outside of the hospital, Joe Judd said. When I went to college here, there were 12,000 students. If there were 12,000 students here, we'd have a different economy. Peak enrollment since 2000 came in 2006 at 12,349. The current strategic enrollment plan that runs through 2025 doesn't include getting back to that mark. We're not building an empire here, Norman said. We're not trying to get back to 12,500. I've talked to the administration and said I really feel like our sweet spot is 9,000 to 10,000 on-campus students. I don't want to stretch our infrastructure and have to start building again. I want the resources to go toward our students, our programming, and supporting our faculty and staff. Unless the administration changes their mind or they stop listening to me, that goal, between 9,000 students and 10,000 students, is really where we want to be by 2025. We want to stay there and sharpen that focus on student success. Ultimately, our goal is to become a beacon of student success in the state and the country. That is where we want to get that people know EIU is a place where first-generation and underrepresented students and any student can come and have an incredible opportunity to succeed, graduate, and find their dream job. Maintaining the enrollment increases from the past 3 years is EIU's next step. The selling point, Norman said, would continue to be stressed, is the value proposition that is EIU. It has the lowest cost of attendance of any public university in the state, an average of a 14-to-1 student-to-faculty ratio, and a graduation rate consistently topping 90%. I know that affordability and value are something we hear from our prospective students and families again and again, Norman said. It gets us in the conversation. A lot of times we have to change their minds. They think we're the third choice, and we have to change their minds that we're the first choice. But it's that value that gets us in the conversations. It's that private institution feel at the public institution price that really has made EIU attractive in a time when people are value sensitive. More than ever, people don't want to just get in the door. They want to graduate, and they want to get in the door and graduate at a cost that doesn't set them back with student loans for a decade. Continuing on the front page with Tom Kasich's opinion titled, U of I's Black Enrollment Still Lagging. The University of Illinois Urbana campus not only set a record for total enrollment this fall at 52,331, but also reported record numbers of women at 23,892 and African Americans at 3,876. Still, African Americans make up a meager percentage of students at the U of I's flagship campus, just 7.4% of the student body. The percentage is up from 2010, when just 5.6% of the Urbana campus population was African American, and last year when it was 6.9%. But it's not as great as other nearby state universities, nor does it come close to Illinois' overall black population, estimated at 14.6% in 2019. At nearby Illinois State University, where black enrollment is up 5% this fall, there are 1,968 African-American students out of a total enrollment of 20,720. That's 9.4% of the campus population. The low percentage of black students at the U of I belies President Tim Kaline's pledge 5 years ago to address the paltry numbers of black students on campus. That's not good enough, he said, of the African-American enrollment in 2015, then at 5.9%. In our future thinking, I think we need to take that on, not in an incremental way, but in a bold way. Meanwhile, the percentage of female students at the Urbana campus this fall, 45.6%, is up from 42.2% in 1990. Whites make up 41.3% of the Urbana campus enrollment this fall, down from 57.2% in 2010 and 65% in 2000. The big percentage gains in enrollment at Urbana have been among self-reported Hispanics, 11.3% this fall versus 5% in 2000. Asians, 20.9% this fall versus 11.1% in 2000. And international students, 17.9% this fall versus 10% in 2000. Due to the global pandemic, the number of international students at the U of I this fall dropped for the first time in many years to 9,363 students, down from 10,809 last year. Nearly all public universities are reporting fewer international students this fall. Indiana University has 1,473 fewer international students. The numbers at Illinois State and Michigan State are also down slightly. The greatest number of international students at the U of I are from China at 5,200, followed by India at 1,320, South Korea with 814, Taiwan with 310, and Indonesia with 130. Also worth noting is the change in enrollment at certain colleges over the last 10 years. The Geis College of Business has grown from 3,886 students 10 years ago to 8,233 this fall. Engineering had 8,620 students 10 years ago and is at 11,907 today. Enrollment at the College of Law has dropped from 735 in 2010 to 469 today. But for a most startling contrast in the evolution of the student body at the U of I, take a look at the demographics of the 34,018 student campus in 1970. 29,352, or 86% of the student body, was white. 1341, or 3.9%, was international. 1251, or 3.6%, was black. 180, or 0.52%, was Hispanic. 11,978, or 35%, was female. And 5646, or 16%, was from outside of Illinois. Problem solvers. The 50-member Problem Solvers Caucus was in the news last week when it proposed a compromise federal stimulus bill trying to nudge House and Senate leaders from their corners. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican Taylorville, whose district includes Champaign-Urbana, became a member of the group soon after he entered Congress in 2013 but left it 4 years later. I don't think it's that he doesn't want to be a part of it, but he's on a lot of caucuses already that push common sense legislation and do very similar things. It's just a matter of time and resources, said Davis' spokeswoman at that time. Asked this week if the congressman supports the problem solvers' $1.5 trillion COVID-19 relief package, Davis spokesman Aaron DeGroot noted it has not been introduced in bill form, so we don't know what the specifics of their proposal looks like outside of their PowerPoint with top-line numbers. But Rodney is generally supportive of the contents of their proposal and their efforts to reach a consensus of enacting additional relief legislation. Tom Kasich's column appears Sundays in the News Gazette, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. And continuing inside the front page, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of staff writer Anthony Zillis. Most years when Mike Hopkins volunteers at the Walk to Defeat ALS, which normally begins at Dodds Park, his team is at a different location, the golf course. They're virtual walkers, Hopkins said, who gather together to raise money for the disease. They're playing golf, but they're remembering ALS, Hopkins said. The walk is a way of gathering people together to show support. This year, all participants will be virtual walkers. Participants can register online, and they'll do their own walk for the event, which officially takes place Saturday. Hopkins said about around 20 different walks are scheduled to happen around the area. That means Hopkins will be doing his walk this year on the golf course with the rest of the team. This year, you're not going to be showing up at a big event, he said. It's all online. Hopkins has been involved with the walk since its inception in Champaign 5 years ago as part of a nationwide event. Like many of the volunteers, Hopkins sees the walk as a way to honor Paige Parkhill, who died in 2018 after a struggle with the disease. I had known her for 35 years, so it's a personal thing to me, Hopkins said. It's a devastating thing to see happen. While the event is organized by an organization in Chicago, the money raised will be used to provide resources for people suffering from ALS in the Champaign-Urbana area and to fund ALS research. An online auction is also currently taking place. By Thursday, this year's walk in Champaign had already raised $42,875 toward its $50,000 goal. Community members can register for the walk and donate at ALSA.org. That's ahead of schedule, Hopkins said of the fundraising. We expected to suffer because of COVID-19 and not being able to be together. We're thrilled. The response has exceeded expectations so far. We're not at our goal, but we're close. And continuing with history, area history. In 1920, the first fall festival during the auspices of the Knights of Columbus was set to begin at the Champaign County Fairgrounds. There was to be a dance every evening in the Floral Hall, free band concerts, and free rides on the merry-go-round and Ferris wheel. In 1970, on this date, quarterback Mike Wells led Illinois to a 2016 win in the season opener at Memorial Stadium. The victory before 33,246 fans ended an 11-game losing streak. In 2005, a University of Illinois chemistry professor working to make customized molecules was one of 25 winners in 2005 of a $500,000 no-strings-attached fellowship from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. U of I professor Todd Martinez was the fifth person locally to win a Genius Grant, as the MacArthur Awards are commonly called. International history, today's highlight. On September 20th, 2017, Hurricane Maria, the strongest hurricane to hit Puerto Rico in more than 80 years, struck the island, wiping out as much as 75% of the power distribution lines and causing an island-wide blackout. On this date in 1519, Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan and his crew set out from Spain on 5 ships to find a western passage to the Spice Islands. Magellan was killed en route, but one of his ships eventually circled the world. And in 1873, panic swept the floor of the New York Stock Exchange in the wake of railroad bond defaults and bank failures. In 1962, James Meredith, a black student, was blocked from enrolling at the University of Mississippi by Democratic Governor Ross R. Barnett. Meredith was later admitted. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the News Gazette for Sunday, September 20th, 2020. Please stay tuned.